This is our final day, and this morning's class covers a lot of material, and so we're going to move quickly. I'll try at least to move quickly so that we can cover everything. Do you know anybody that sometimes becomes angry? Maybe you're one of those persons that sometimes becomes angry. So this is a very nice section. There's others. But this is a nice section to do a little refresher when you need to give some help, support, guidance, care, whatever. How to help somebody overcome an anger thing that's playing out in their life at a particular time. Because that's what's happening with Dhruva. He has become very angry. And we heard this battle scene yesterday, and it was, you know, the yakshas aren't, they're an interesting category. But they're living entities, and whatever the living entity, one doesn't have the prerogative to just to go and kill them because you're angry. If you're a powerful kshatriya, it's part of the responsible life to know when to apply that strength, that power of chastisement of an inappropriate degree. We mentioned it yesterday, repeating it. For a kshatriya to do what a kshatriya has to do, anger, transcendental, or at least dharmic anger, is required. Society requires protection, and commensurate with the situation that demands protection, anger is required. We hear Prabhupada say, Krishna was inciting Arjuna to anger. He was previously, in the early stages of Bhagavad Gita, he was in this nonviolent place. And that's not what kshatriyas are supposed to do. So kshatriyas are supposed to give protection. And how can you give protection if you're nonviolent? So, anger has its place. Properly, not excessively directed. Dharmically, not excessively directed. So he was in this excessive place. Excessive, inappropriate, adharmic anger. So Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather, came and wanted, his function was to dissipate that anger and restore Dhruva to Dharma, appropriate anger for the situation. So let's hear and see, as you're hearing, see what principles might apply. There's some circumstance specific instructions that don't apply to us, but there are principles that apply to us, so see if you can listen with that view in mind. So we'll start with Manu's speaking, Swayambhuva Manu. Ati roshena, excessive anger, is sinful. Papa mana, there's the verse, Atiroshena Papamana. And Tamo Dvarena leads to hell. Sins lead to hell. My dear son, please stop. It is not good to become unnecessarily angry. It is the path to hellish life. Now, you are going beyond the limit by killing yakshas who are actually not offenders. So here comes a nice graphic. He's giving a danger signal. Look out. It's very, you're in dangerous territory. Stop. Commentary says, Atiroshena means with unnecessary anger. When Dhruva Maharaj went beyond the limits of necessary anger, his grandfather, Swayambhu Manu, immediately came to protect him from further sinful action. The image on the top is modern warfare. And Prabhupada explains that's sinful. I can't remember where I saw this, but when there's war, there's statistics how many soldiers were killed and how many innocent people were killed, how many civilians were killed just because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and kaboom. Modern warfare. It's sinful. Aside from, you know, what is dharmic fighting? Dharma yudha, dharmic fighting. Where does that exist? Prabhupada, I heard one lecture, Prabhupada said, since the Kurukshetra battle, there hasn't been a dharmic war. It's all something else. Political, fighting over resources, and fighting over power, and fighting over anything but dharma. So this image goes on, and it's not okay. The breakdown of anger, of course we know from Bhagavad Gita, anger arises from kamesha, krodesha, rajoguna samudbhava. Rajoguna, it arises from contact with rajagun. And from rajagun comes kama. And from frustrated kama comes krodha. So that's the root, is passion, contact with the mode of passion. And then elsewhere, we find emotion of any kind. It's a feeling, and it starts with thinking, and then feeling, and then willing. So back in the feeling stage, anger can be checked. Of course, anger can be checked by the thinking stage prior to the feeling stage. And the thinking stage is seeing objects as meant for service to Krishna. Then you don't get the feeling of anger. In a situation which triggers anger, in a mood of, this is advice, in a mood of detachment and aided by spiritual intelligence, this pause space, mode of goodness space, what was that thought that triggered the anger? And if that thought is all about me, we'll see several slides, it's all about me. If the thought is all about me, is that in harmony with Dharma? So that's if you have some discriminating capacity. It's not just carried away by passion and the feeling. You can pause mode of goodness and then consider what is the thought that gave rise to the anger. So the thought is the contemplation of the situation. Commonly people that are angry, they just feel justified. They did this to me. And so the thought is justified, the feeling is justified, and here comes my clenched fist. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches, before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. Now it's not so common, someone who's in an angry space, that they pull out Bhagavad Gita and think, what should I do about this? They just move with the anger because it's a compelling, powerful feeling. However, if we regularly read Bhagavad Gita, there's purification. When we become situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, can cross over the ocean of material existence, or transcendental knowledge can distinguish the blazing fire of material existence. Knowledge, Bhagavad Gita can help us, although it's conceptual and it can remain just notional, but if we hear regularly, and then it can lift our consciousness and give us tools to detach ourselves from. So this is just that kind of a lesson. Here comes this feeling. I feel the feeling rising. I'm feeling some anger. What is this feeling? So we'll just go through it again. Where's this feeling? What's the thought behind the feeling? So behind the thought is the contemplation of a sense object. Then that's the thought. So it's, I want to be the enjoyer, and this isn't giving me enjoyment. So that's the feeling. Frustration. Anger. So if it's me-centered, you let go. This is a devotee. And it's, the verse begins in the present body. The present body has senses and sense objects, and if the business, the modus operandi of the senses is trying to be the enjoyer of sense objects, that's passion, and that gives rise to these feelings. So before giving up the present body, which means while you still have your senses and objects out there, if one is able to tolerate, now that's just a beginning. There's transcendental altogether, but in the beginning, it's just tolerate. Here's an urge. Right? Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam. Vegam. Urge or pushing. You tolerate it. You don't invest energy and get absorbed in it. You put your energy and absorption and attention in that which is pleasing to Krishna. And there's strength, there's power, there's potency, there's intelligence, and that can carry you beyond the anger, beyond just tolerating the anger. That person is well situated. Stitta pragya. That's intelligence. So this is one of his messages to Dhruva. It's a Bhagavad Gita class right down the battlefield here. Nasmat kulochitam. Nasmat kulochitam. This is not benefiting our dynasty. So our dynasty, he's Swayambhuva Manu. He's the original forefather of all fathers. and he's directly in Swami Bhupamoto's line. So for people today, who cares? But for cultured people, it's very significant. It's exactly the same argument Krishna is using in Bhagavad Gita. You come from this wonderful lineage, and you have to represent this wonderful lineage. You know, some modern people, who cares lineage? Who even knows what their lineage is? But for a cultured person, you're representing your predecessors. Just like for us, whoever your mother and father are in that lineage, we're in the spiritual lineage. And we're representing our whole organization. People judge our whole organization based on what we do and how we conduct ourselves. It's a reality. I could tell stories. They're very interesting. But the essence of the story is because one devotee acted with improper behavior and words and stuff, the whole organization became judged. And I'm keeping away from this place. And, you know, people that are in responsible positions in the world, I'll say one of them. It was short version. Penn State University. One devotee, now Ganga Narayan, but then just, you know, a PhD student. He was in charge of that club, the Vedic Vision Club. And he had some funding to bring Badahari to come to the university and conduct a nice function for the whole university. And he teamed up with, there's multiple in the city, or in the, whatever it is, State College, Pennsylvania, there's yoga groups, and there was kind of like a yoga group director, or coordinator. So he buddied up with this lady who was, and she was like really great. And then something happened, and she started becoming, it's not so great anymore. And then she confided. She said, when I found out that, because I did some research on Badahari, and he's an ISKCON guy, and, you know, I don't like ISKCON. Why don't you like ISKCON? Because I had a bad experience. But you're not like this. So he had to explain, not everybody's like that bad experience person. But she had like, you know, I'm out of here with that ISKCON. Just because of that. So that judgment, that distancing melted just because the nice devotee had nice qualities. And then, you know, her door opened. And it was a great function. It was really a well-attended function. He melted her heart too. So, one should be, is something to remind somebody that's, you know, we check this anger, please, because it's unbecoming for that, this lineage that we're part of. Virtuous people, sad vigar hitam, they condemn this uncontrolled anger, killing people left and right, that you shouldn't be harmed. So this is the other 11 of the 12 Mahajans. He's a great authority. Now, I'm going to read quickly, Canto 4, Chapter 11, text number 8. My dear son, the killing of the sinless yakshas, which you have undertaken, is not at all approved by authorities, and it does not befit our family, which is supposed to know the laws of religion and irreligion. And then, of course, act accordingly. This is bad. Killing many for one person's fault because of your attachment to your brother Uttama. So this is another principle. Bodily identification, Dhruva, covers your intelligence. And it's not the path of sadhus. Instead, it's the behavior of animals. That's a pretty neat image, huh? My dear son, it has been proved that you are very much affectionate towards your brother and are greatly aggrieved at his being killed by the yakshas. But just consider, for one yaksha's offense, you have killed many others who are innocent. One should not accept the body as the self, and thus, like the animals, kill the bodies of others. This is especially forbidden by saintly persons who follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are strong statements. Sadhunam, and generally speaking, who is a sadhu? Over and over, Prabhupada say, sadhu means a devotee. And what makes them saintly? Well, same thing that what makes one a devotee. One follows the vartma, the path of sense control. Just like Narada's verse, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Dhruva Maharaj is being reminded by Swayambhuva Manu that he is a blessed servitor of Vishnu. And here it is specifically. Aradhyapa Duraradhyam Vishnos Tat Paramam Padam. Paramam Padam. You're already destined to go to Vaikuntha. Hey, Dhruva. You forgot. You're a devotee. And you're meant to go back to Godhead. It's already been told. You worship the Lord as Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena, which means with the thought that he is in all beings. And these yakshas, they're also beings. So this unnecessary killing is unbefitting. Text 11. It is very difficult to achieve the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha planets, but you are so fortunate that you are already destined to go to that abode by worshiping him as a supreme abode of all living entities. Because you're a pure devotee of the Lord, you just forgot. The Lord is always thinking of you. And you are also recognized by all of his confidential devotees. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior. I am therefore surprised. Why have you undertaken such an abominable task? So, there's a nice example of this found in the Vishnu Sahasranam, one that I like. You know, 1,000 names of Vishnu. So one of the names of Vishnu is Vasu Mana. Vasu Mana means Vishnu or Krishna is always thinking of Vasu. Vasu in this case refers to, Baladev Vidyabhusan says, it refers to Bhishma Dev, because Bhishma Dev was always thinking of Krishna. Krishna would engage in meditation on Bhishma Dev. And so there's this term that is connected with this Vasu Mana name. This is Mamata. Now, Mamata has a material and a spiritual application. Mamata is another way of the aham mameti, the consciousness of the materialist, that I'm the body and everything connected to the body is mine. There's a spiritual conception. We discussed this earlier, actually, without using the mamata. That is, I am Krishna's. That's who I am, in simple terms. And Krishna is mine. Not like my property, but my relationship with Krishna, my service unto Krishna eternally is mine. Nothing can take it away. Krishna won't take it away. No material circumstance can take it away. That's what's in the mind category. And then from Krishna's side, the devotee is my everything. He reciprocates with the devotee who's thinking that way. I am his, and he is mine. It's a relationship like that. So you, Dhruva, you have that relationship. You just got covered over here. From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, and he is never lost to me. So stop your killing and instead think of Krishna's pleasure. So this is an anger check, because that's what the whole section is. Titikshaya Karunaya sounds like a nice verse from Canto 3, the qualities of a sadhu. Maitriya Chakila Jantushu. The Lord is very satisfied with his devotee when the devotee greets other people with tolerance, mercy, friendship, and equality. Sounds familiar? Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, divine, the character of one who is very pleasing to Krishna because of being situated in devotion. They're very dear to Krishna with these qualities. And the qualities, if you recall from our earlier discussion, qualities of a devotee are resting on one quality, Krishna Eka Sharana. And then Krishna decorates with these other qualities and Krishna smiles. How nice. He's very satisfied to see his devotees decorated with such nice qualities. So think of pleasing Krishna, please. Think of pleasing Krishna, please. When anger is doing its thing. The Supreme Lord, the soul of all beings, is pleased when a Madhyama devotee, this is now taking the verse and stating it again. This is Vishwanath's explanation. Tatikshaya, tolerant of superiors. And when ill-treated by envious, so tolerant of superiors, sometimes, superiors may chastise. I mean, tolerance is the bare minimum. You thank them. This is good. And when others treat you, tolerate. Karunaya. Merciful to inferiors. This is the Madhyama's position. Maitriya, friendly towards equals, and samatvena takes others' happiness and distress as his own. Maybe you remember the final instruction of Lord Vishnu to Dhruva was, Narada to Dhruva, way back in chapter 8. The final instruction was this one. You know, it's repeated over and over in different ways in the Bhagavatam to come to the Madhyama stage. These same principles. And the principles, when one abides by them, it's pleasing to Krishna. And we're in this Madhyama stage, but we can also be pleasing to Krishna. And we can become more pleasing to Krishna by following these principles. And we may not be so consistent, so continue to strive with the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Become a nice Madhyama. So those that are superior, those that are inferior, those that are equals, and then all living entities. With compassion. Reference from Bhagavad Gita, given in Prabhupada's purport, 6:32 Bhagavad Gita, I consider that practicing yogi who sees equally everything as equal to himself in all circumstances, whether in happiness or suffering, to be the topmost yogi. Now that's not Prabhupada's translation, that's Vishwanath's translation, or rendering of sixth chapter. Nice, I'll read it again. I consider that practicing yogi who sees equally everything as equal to himself in all circumstances, whether in happiness or suffering, to be the topmost yogi. So Swayambhuva Manu is giving a Bhagavad Gita class right on the battlefield, like Krishna gave to Arjuna. But he's saying it in different language, but it's just same essential message. Now, what about us? This is conclusion of this section. We're going to move on to another section. How much do we want to become free from the effects of the modes of nature, particularly this passion turning into anger? Do we want to become free from the tendencies of gross and subtle bodies? Because that's where the anger is situated, within the subtle body, and then it makes its way into the gross body. The legs kick, or the fist clenches, or the mouth says something. The knowledge acquiring and working senses are moved by the mind. So would we like to be not driven by the modes of nature, then influencing those two? Instead, connect with the mood of service? The answer for a devotee is, of course, yes. And then, even while here, if some persons have shared this situation, that situation, and then comes the yeah, but. Especially when, you know, the other entity, the other person or relative or family member or somebody out there does it again and again and again and again and again and again. I just like, I can't take it. Mood of service disappears. Who one really is disappears. Krishna disappears. And it becomes all about the modes of nature and struggling. Yeah. Here's the next verse. One who actually satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead during one's lifetime becomes liberated, jiva mukto, from the gross and subtle material conditions. I mean, you still have a body, gross body and a subtle body, but being driven by them, that's the jiva mukto idea. Thus, being freed from all material modes of nature, he achieves unlimited spiritual bliss. There's in green letters there, Brahma Nirvanam. Brahma Nirvanam. That's neutral. But it's actually beyond neutral. It's not being affected because of being connected. We'll see this in just a minute. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Karmis tried to satisfy themselves by sense gratification. Gyanis tried to satisfy themselves by subtle activities or mental speculation and thinking themselves to be God. Yogis also tried to satisfy themselves. This is, it's all about me message. By thinking that they can achieve different mystic perfections. But only devotees try to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what devotion is. The devotee's process of self-realization is completely different from the processes of karmis, gyanis, and yogis. Everyone else is trying to satisfy himself, whereas the devotee tries only to satisfy the Lord. Continuing the purport. By working to please the Lord, by engaging his senses in the Lord's loving service, the devotee is immediately situated on the transcendental platform. Sounds like a Bhagavad Gita verse, doesn't it? And he enjoys unlimited blissful life. Now this term jiva mukto or jiva near mukto is also found in Prahlad's teachings, where in that case jiva near mukto means freed from the subtle body. So how's that? It's bhakti. When there's no more subtle body, you have a gross body, then the mind, intelligence, and false ego become fully spiritualized. So that's beyond Brahma Nirvana, this jiva nirmukto. So yoga takes one beyond Nirvana. Nirvana is negation, and bhakti is this spiritual bliss beyond the material mind and senses. And that sounds nice, but one can directly experience it also. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. It's meant to be directly experienced. Here's the seventh canto reference. Vishwanath. The wise know that direct contact with the Lord, which includes the happiness of Brahman, destroys samsara. For the sinful person possessing material bodies in the world, therefore worship the Paramatma in your heart. So, destroying samsara is possible only when the subtle body is destroyed. It the other way. The subtle body carries the soul to the next body. As long as you have a subtle body, that's going to happen. So how are you going to get rid of it? It's attached to us and we're attached to it. Bhakti is the only means. We read that Kapila Dev teaching, chapter 25. Bhakti has the power to dissolve the subtle body. Dissolve it. not like tolerate it. Dissolve it. Tolerate's a beginning, but that's not dissolving. It'll come again. Bhakti is necessary to get this jiva nimukto, this spiritual happiness. Here is Vishwanath. Prakritair gunai vimuktaha means that not only is he free from the gunas of prakriti, but specially liberated beyond merging in Brahman. It's a lesson about the very special position of bhakti. It's not just negation. It's not just winding down and turning the volume down on suffering and then kind of getting into this neutral space. That's not the benefit of bhakti. It's not the limit of the benefit of bhakti. When Manu saw, so now that's one section. Now we're going into another section, the second of three. Not exactly that Dhruva couldn't hear him, or he didn't accept his words. It's something like what happened when he heard from Narada. It didn't fully go in. And this is Swayambhu Manu, another one of the 12 Mahajans. He was feeling great remorse because of the death of his brother. He was attached to his brother. When you're attached, it sometimes makes it hard to hear. More than sometimes. When you're attached, it makes it hard to hear. You hear with filters at best, if you hear anything. So Swayambhuva Manu continues. Here's the next section. This is a philosophical section. The other, first one was like emotion and directing your emotion through knowledge with higher consciousness. Now he's going to go to a philosophical, a sambandha topic. Krishna is the source of everything. And behind everything is Krishna. So the death of your brother, behind that is Krishna. So don't have an issue with Krishna, please. What's the nature of all things that we perceive? Who is the killer and who is killed? You know, like this section when Maharaj Parikshit saw the personality of Kali breaking the legs of the bull. And he turned to the bull and said, who has done this? Remember? And the bull said, well, it's really hard to say. Some people say this and some people say that. So Manu is also going to do that. Manu is also going to do that in a different way than the bull said to Maharaj Parikshit. But he's outlining, in this section, he's going to outline people that don't get it. They don't see the personality of God that is behind everything. They say, this is the cause, that's the cause, the other thing is the cause for events. So this is a really important, you know, philosophical section, resting upon Vedanta, there is the original cause of everything. So here we go. Get ready for your philosophy class. He starts with creation. Women and men arise from bodies made of the five elements. From their interaction, there's more women and men. And then more of the same. Dhruva Maharaj was indirectly advised not to be affected by his brother's death because bodily relationships are material. So more on this creation, main sentence, and destruction topic. O king, as the creation of bodies takes place in this way, so does the maintenance and destruction of bodies take place by the action of the gunas, through the maya of the Supreme Lord. Everything is happening by prakriti, right? Krishna says. My dear king, Dhruva, it is simply by the illusory material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by the interaction of the three modes of material nature that creation, maintenance, and annihilation take place. So look at the big picture. It's the modes of nature moving. And this thing of affection for family members, that's part of life. It's in all species. Check it out. There's the passion energy, creation. And there's the goodness energy, the maintenance, the destruction energy, ignorance. Maintenance is also a tendency within the modes of nature, within all species of life. Those who are transcendental even to the material modes of nature are situated in the mode of pure goodness. They attain eternal life in the spiritual world. How can, this is Vishwanath explaining what is being said here. How can creation, maintenance, and destruction of bodies take place without some foundation of consciousness? So behind creation, maintenance, and destruction and the modes of nature moving, there's a foundation, there's a controller of them. Your brother has been destroyed. Behind that, there's a foundation, a controller. Here's this nimitta matram, same phrase as we find in Bhagavad Gita. My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. When he gives the impetus, many other causes and effects are produced. And thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet. Behind your brother's death is the personality of Godhead, not just this yaksha or some yakshas. Everything is happening by the energy of the Supreme Lord. But atheistic philosophers say that everything is just the interaction of material elements. There's an interesting little example Prabhupada uses, because he was a chemist by profession. So this plus this equals that. Or you add this and that and you get another thing. By interaction of material elements. So science is right, right? Everything is just an interaction of elements. But one cannot produce life by such interaction of chemicals. There are 8,400,000 different species of life with different wishes and different actions. That's not created. The origin of all of that is not simply the modes. The modes are influencing something, but what's the origin of those modes? Continuing in that same purport, the potter's wheel rotates, and several varieties of earthen pots come out. There are many causes for the earthen pots, but the original cause is the potter, who sets a force on the wheel. That force comes by his superintendence. Using a worldly example to explain a transcendental example. Behind things that move in this world, even moving by the influence of the modes of nature, this creation, maintenance, and destruction principle is operating by the modes of nature. And behind that is the controller of the modes of nature. the potter moving the potter's wheel, setting everything in motion. Well, here's another unspoken question that leads to three other verses. If Vishnu is aloof like this, how is everything being done? So now comes the time energy of the Supreme Lord. By agitation of the modes through time. He's remote, but he agitates the modes through this time energy. And then the next text. As time, he is indestructible, beginningless, and inexhaustible. Yet, he causes the beginning and end of all that is temporary, exhaustible, and limited. It's an important concept. Also a Bhagavad Gita concept, that the force of time is one of the five topics. Not so much spoken about and not so easy to understand. But here is Swami Bhuvamano giving this Bhagavad Gita class about the time energy is the agency through which the remote control of the Supreme Lord is moving things. The modes of nature and the elements themselves and creation maintenance sits by the time energy. As time, Vishnu is neutral towards all beings, and he gives the example like justice, Prabhupada. Vishnu meets out equal karmic justice. The example is used like dust is impartially moved by wind. I like that example. So picture in your mind that out there somewhere there's some dust, and then everything just settled. Then comes a wind. Now is the wind being discriminating? Well, that particle of dust, you can stay there. This particle of dust, you got to move, Prabhu. It's not. But some particles of dust move and some don't. It's not the wind is partial. There's other factors. So as the wind is impartial, time is impartial. Krishna maintains his neutrality, even he's acting and moving the modes of nature. And some people is happiness and some people is distress. And it has to do with their guna and karma, which is being moved through the agency of time. Say it negatively. When time energy is withdrawn, the whole thing collapses. That's cosmic annihilation. Partial or complete. Very simple. Just move time. Boop. The whole thing. Now we're ready to go. Here's some time. Boop. It's fascinating. It's Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am destroyer of all things, but time doesn't just destroy things. Time creates things. And time maintains things. And time destroys things. Time moves matter. Without time, matter doesn't move. Using this example, dust is moved by the wind. Now you can move your hand and move the dust, but that's another force. The good fortune, sadasad yoni janmasu, this is this reference from Bhagavad Gita, the good fortune, ill fortune that comes to someone is the product of their own creation. We're the architect of our own good fortune, ill fortune. That's the karma message. And we made some free will choices, trying to be an enjoyer, and according to the modes, and so then that generates karma of different varieties, and then it happens. Good fortune, ill fortune. We're responsible. The laws of nature aren't responsible. God's not responsible. He's neutral. similar idea in Brahma Samhita, where yastvindragopam atavendra maho swakarma bandhanaropa palabhajanam atunoti. That the verse Brahma is saying, Govinda, of course he does through the agency of his expansion Vishnu, but he then meets out, he gives the karma of all living entities from the topmost Indra down to the Indragopa. Yes, Twindragopam, Indragopam. And down to up to Indra. All that, so he's neutral. And he gives their karma. So he does through the agency of time. He's neutral. It's a high philosophy presentation, but it's interesting to understand how material nature works. And if you don't understand how material nature works, you get bewildered. You get moved by it instead of being detached from it. So here's two verses. The differentiation among varieties of life and their suffering and enjoyment is explained by some. Now he's giving these different atheistic philosophies, the six darshans. Some say it's the result of karma. That's the karma mimamsa folks. Others say it is due to nature. You're going to see a chart, so I won't itemize each one. Others say it is due to time, others say it is due to fate, and others say it is due to desire. The absolute truth, transcendence, is never subject to the understanding of imperfect sensory endeavor, nor is he subject to direct experience. He's the master of varieties of energies, like the full material energy. And no one can understand his plans or actions. Therefore, it should be concluded that although he is the original cause of all causes, no one can know him by mental speculation. So these other folks, they're the mental speculators. And they have very comprehensive, you know, people buy into their comprehensive explanation. They have followers. And so there's different doctrines about why is there variety and duality and stuff the way that we see it in this world. So the Mimamsakas, that's on the upper left, they say everything is happening because of our karma, our fruit of activities. And Charvaka, it just has to do with the nature of matter itself. So this is Charvaka is the one, you eat, drink, and be merry, beg, borrow, and steal, but get ghee. Just enjoy, because that's all there is. Okay, so without going through all of this, there's different philosophers resting their ideas upon the Vedas, and they make their interpretation of the Vedas according to their ideology. Different opinions, different philosophers. Vishwanath. These followers of Kuvera are not the killers of your brother. The cause of birth and death of living beings is the Lord. He's the cause of everything, ultimately. But no philosophers can understand the Lord's plan. At least by mental speculation, he cannot be understood. So now we're winding up this second section. It's high philosophy. I hope you don't mind. We're just hearing from one of the Mahajans, Swayambhuva Manu, about how things really are. O king, no one can know the plan of the Lord. This is Bhishma Dev. Recognize him. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. And the reason given in the Dhruva story, these philosophers, they're ignorant of the root cause of everything. They say this and that. These other philosophers that have their philosophy, they're factors, but it's not the whole picture. They're unaware. They're against, in fact, the root cause of everything. So therefore they can't see the root cause of everything. They're covered by illusion. The Lord creates the universe, maintains it, and destroys it without attachment or ego. He is not affected by actions of the gunas. He does everything through the external energy. This is a philosophical point about the Lord's position. And the misunderstandings of his position for various reasons. But the essence, what Vishwanath is saying, is don't blame Vishnu. Although he's the cause. And other things may be seen as the causes, like the yakshas. They're not the cause. So how does Dhruva take all this philosophy? Well, I can't give up my ego. I'm still angry at the yakshas. And now comes just this compelling instruction. Just surrender. And give up this anger. It dissolves the ego. Surrender connects one with Krishna through bhakti, which then dissolves the subtle body, includes ego. My dear boy, Dhruva, please surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate goal of the progress of the world. Everyone, including the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, everyone is working under his control, just as a bull, prompted by a rope in his nose, is controlled by its owner. This is another repeated metaphor, and the metaphor is a bull is very powerful. Although he's very powerful, he's controlled just by his nose. And how that's done is a ring is put in his nose and ropes attached to the ring, and then they pull this way and pull that way, and his nose is very sensitive. He's powerful, but he goes this way, that way. So the metaphor is, just as a bull is controlled that way, so civilized humans voluntarily submit themselves, put this ring in my nose. That's the varna and ashram duties. And I'm controlled by that. I won't go left when the pull is to the right. I won't go right when the pull is to the left. I'm controlled by dharma. Even I may want to go left or right, other than the indication that's being pulling me this way, that way, by dharma. I won't deviate from dharma because I voluntarily put this ring in my nose. I've submitted to the codes of dharma. Persons who have done so, it's the beginning, it's not the ultimate, but it's the beginning of human life. Prior to that, it's not yet human life. So we need to, you, Dhruva, we need to, and this is, he's Manu giving laws to mankind, he's giving his laws to his grandson, Dhruva, there's this birth and death, or immortality. The Lord is death for the demons, but the devotees, he's Amrita. Prabhupada's purport. So those who submit to the Lord through the medium of this ring in the nose, if they're controlled by the codes of the Vedas and proper conduct, Dhruva, then you come to this position of deathlessness. And please remember, it's already been told, that's where you're going. So please align yourself to that destination. Remember who you are and what you have received. Giving up your mother when you were 5 years old, wounded by the words of your stepmother, you went to the forest. Worshipping the Lord by austerities, you achieved the topmost position in the three worlds. You're already a surrendered soul. Get with it. My dear Dhruva, please, therefore, turn your attention to the Supreme Person, who is the infallible Brahman. Face the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your original position, and thus, by self-realization, you will find this material differentiation to be merely flickering. Then comes another message that we've heard already several times, and here it is again. This friend and enemy message, friend and enemy differentiation, is not present in a person who's self-realized. So give up this idea, the enemy are the yakshas, because they did harm to my friend, so therefore my enemy. Give up this thinking. It's the thinking of it's all about me. This regaining, this is a translation, text 30. Thus, regaining your natural position and rendering service unto the Supreme Lord, who is the all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure, and who gives in all living entities, lives in all living entities as the super soul, you will very soon forget the illusory understanding of I and mine. You know, the philosophy is bouncing. So just take shelter of the personality of Godhead and it'll be gone. This I and mine, friend, enemy, it's all about me, consciousness. You're suffering, you're sinning, you're going to suffer further because of that, because of forgetting the personality of Godhead. Vishwanath explains, Manu is saying, do you not remember how you attained the Lord when you were 5 years old? Regaining your natural position and rendering service to the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, who is the all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure and who lives in all living entities as the super soul, you will very soon forget the illusory I and mine. Prabhupada. Dhruva was already liberated because at the age of 5 he saw the Lord. But he was temporarily afflicted by the illusory bodily conception of life due to his brother's death. Now, Manu reminded him that he should not continue in this material conception of I and mine. This is Jiva Goswami. This verse shows that Bhagavan is bliss itself, or himself, endowed with all shaktis. It is clear that this Bhagavan is an indivisible entity, appearing with full manifestation with these shaktis, whereas Brahman is an incomplete manifestation without appearance of those shaktis. This is from Bhagavat Sandarbha. So there he is, the personal feature. Take shelter there. And this anger and influence of the modes of nature thing that you're undergoing, forgetfulness of who you are thing that you're undergoing, it'll disappear. So this is our instruction, how to give up anger. Well, it's an enemy of self-realization. This is the negative. It's detrimental for those who desire liberation. It makes one a source of dread for all others. So the prompt is to read these verses, so I'm going to read the verses. 31, 32. We may finish. I'm going a little fast. All of this is, I mean, this could be a Bhagavad Gita seminar in itself. My dear King, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as a medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instruction. A person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger, because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others. So don't give that pain to others. Just let go of your anger. When you hold on to the anger, it's more painful than letting go of the anger. Because you have in anger killed many yakshas, although only one was the killer of your brother, you have offended Kuvera. Now this is the concluding little section. So, remembering from yesterday evening, the yakshas, they're followers of Kuvera. Let me remind you, they are born directly from the body of Brahma. They're direct sons of Brahma, born from his feet. So it's like different parts of his body produce different things. So he's very powerful like that. And so, but, you know, they wanted to eat him. They have some bad propensities, too. Powerful, mystical, defenders, protectors. And, you know, when they're out of control, they're very dangerous. But they're under the protection of Kuvera. And Kuvera is under the protection of Lord Shiva. So you've offended Kuvera and you've offended Lord Shiva. This is not good. And what do you do if you've offended somebody? My son, satisfy Kuvera immediately by offering respects, humble behavior, and kind words, so that the anger of great personalities will not defeat our family. Again, Vishwanath. Sarva Swayambhuva Manu expressed, your actions have been very disrespectful to Kuvera and Shiva. After this, considering that Kuvera was Lord Shiva's friend or devoted follower, Dhruva asked from Manu the benediction of always and in all circumstances being a pure devotee of Lord Vishnu. The significance is that a devotee only asks for the benediction of serving the Lord. We're almost done. Dhruva, then he worships Manu. Manu and the sages that were with Manu, they depart, mission accomplished. Just by sound, he not only gave up the anger and the killing of the yakshas unnecessarily, he's restored his consciousness of a pure devotee. He wants only that position of pure devotion to the personality of Godhead. He's asking Swayambhuva Manu for that benediction. He gives that benediction. Everything's back to normal. And then comes the last chapter after breakfast. He goes back to Godhead. So before he goes back to Godhead, Kuvera comes and gives some nice instruction. But it was Swayambhuva Manu to the rescue. So try to be a practical application. Try to be advised by Swayambhuva Manu's words and his everything that he has done in this chapter to help persons who you see they need a tap on the shoulder. Say, hey, Prabhu. And restore your position. Now, it's not the lineage and pure devotion. It's already been just reminded, hey, it's already been promised you go back to Godhead. So things may be edited to be appropriate, but there's principles that can empower you to help give guidance to another person who's undergoing some struggle. The exaltedness of Dhruva is just by hearing. Got it. It's over. Not lingering anything. He says, restored. So, very helpful, practical, meaningful. Besides, the story is nice. It's just very valuable tools for us. And the sound vibration itself also can help elevate our consciousness in the right position. Okay. Well, we have 5 minutes until breakfast. One question here. I didn't even know if I would be able to finish. So I feel bad in one sense that, you know, it's very valuable that I had to go so fast. It's a good section to read.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So my question is, Dhruva Maharaj, whose perfected soul, who had the darshan of Lord Vishnu, he was succumbed to the anger and stuff. So what is the hope for us?
I guess you should just toss in the towel. Just give up. It's hopeless. Your question was asked in a different way yesterday, not the hopeless question. But, you know, how did it arise? Remember that question?
Yes.
Krishna Priya's question? So, if you're guided by Super Soul, you can do that. Or if a tsunami attacks you, you may become overcome. But the hope for you is Rupa Goswami. Although we're tiny, Krishna is very great. And he's very kind. So that's our hope. Ashabanda. Correct? That's the hope.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have 3-4 points. One is from yesterday class. We talked about resentment.
Resentment.
So, resentment. Okay. So how can we give up resentment?
Forgiveness.
It doesn't come that very easily, just to practice.
You practice.
Okay.
It's an instruction. And you follow instruction. Well, sometimes instructions don't come easily. Following instructions don't come easily. You practice.
Okay. Second point is about coming to Vishuddha Sattva. It's a basic Bhagavad Gita question. So
I'm still thinking on your previous question.
Sorry,
because I wasn't hearing the second one because I was still on the first one. Forgiveness may take time. May take a long time. But it's a path to keep moving on. There's this saying, not only forgive, but forget. Some people say, you know, I forgive, but they don't forget. Yeah. Now, forget doesn't mean the possibility doesn't exist anymore. But it's just, you don't dwell on it. That's the forget. You don't go back and pick the sore, and then it starts to bleed again. Just leave it alone. There's an American Indian saying, the same thing. When there was war, the sign that it was truce is they would bury the hatchet. Heard that one before? It was like a little ceremony and the two tribes would come together and the head of the tribe would bury the hatchet. And the other one would bury the hatchet. But so the saying goes, not only bury the hatchet, but forget where you buried it. Don't go back and unbury the hatchet and pick it up again. You know, it's not necessarily literally forget, just don't go there again. That's the forget. Don't go there again. Forgive and don't go there again. Don't continually obsess about, you know, 5 years ago you said that. And I'm still carrying it. I forgive you, but I can't forget, you know, I know you said it. That's, so keep going, in other words. Okay, go ahead.
Second one is related to the Bhagavad Gita concepts. So coming to Vishuddha Sattva, is it a free will choice to associate with the mode? And if it is, then how about a previous conditioning which we had
it's
with the
both.
Previous?
It's both. It's simultaneously both. That is to say, we're being pushed by our previous association with the modes of nature. And we're making free will choices to say yes to that push or no.
Okay. But sometimes, I think it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita also, it's not very easily. Sometimes we are being forced in that direction.
Yeah, that's conditioning, but it's not, you're forced to be conditioned.
Yeah.
You have a free will choice to not be conditioned. And it's not a matter, okay, I'm not conditioned. I chose it. It's some cultivation required. And mercy required. Purification. Third question.
We have talked about Ravana's and Kubera in Ayodhya pastime and Dandak Yatra forest pastime, forest Yatra lectures.
Yeah.
Kubera, is he a brother of Lord Shiva? He's a friend, I think,
yes.
So, right?
Yes. He's a devotee. He accepts Lord Shiva as worshipable.
Okay.
He worships. They're friends and, you know, more than friends.
Yeah. Here it says it's a brother, so I don't know, in a verse.
Yeah, okay. they don't have the same father.
Okay. And go to the fourth one?
Yeah.
Okay. You also mentioned twice during this presentation that the principle is the thing we have to pick up from the instructions,
yes,
not the details. I don't know if the details are not mentioned in the slide, but they all look the principle and all is applicable.
Well, for example, lineage. We're not in Swayambhuva Manu's lineage.
No.
So I took the principle and applied it to our, we're followers of Srila Prabhupada. It's a principle. The application of the principle is different in detail. That's an example. Oh, here's another. You know, it was already foretold that you're going to go back to Godhead. It's not foretold for us. We're going to go back to Godhead. The opportunity is there. There's details. But there's principle. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you mentioned that bhakti alone dissolves the subtle body.
Did I say alone? Oh, there is no other process besides bhakti. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But to go out of the material world, one needs to dissolve the subtle body so that they can, even the impersonalist, reach the Brahmajyoti. So they have to dissolve the subtle body to reach that place, Maharaj. I was not clear on that. If you could explain.
Not exactly. There is still what has not, the shelter in the living entity being situated in their eternal position has not been achieved by one who merges into the Brahmajyoti. So that merging into the Brahmajyoti, your question specifically is, does that or does that not require dissolving the subtle body? I mean, you're not saying it that way, but that's your question. Yes? The subtle body, I never heard that question before. The subtle body is awarded to a living entity because of separate desire. So the subtle body then provides the means to try to experience separate enjoyment, although there is none. But the subtle body is required to be in Maya, be an illusion. So in the Brahman state, it's neutral. It's not a desire to enjoy independently, but it's not our natural position either. So is there a subtle body, or is there a neutral, anesthetized subtle body? You know, I don't have the answer to that. I could say what makes sense to me, but you know, so what? But I don't know of any scriptural statement that says one way or the other about the subtle body being dissolved. Implicit with the understanding that bhakti alone dissolves the subtle body is the answer is no, it doesn't dissolve the subtle body. It's held in abeyance. And then it becomes activated or animated or reinstated because there is this desire to enjoy separately. Excuse me. Because there isn't a reinstated desire to enjoy in relation to the Supreme, the desire to enjoy is there. It's just anesthetized or in abeyance.
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
We're going to keep our schedule. We're going to end and see you again at 10:15. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.
The last session, chapter 12. Very exciting. Dhruva goes back to Godhead. Get on board. And Suniti also.